Derby 104.
Hello, good morning, it's Abbey 104, it's Sunday morning at 11:05, it's time for Folk Tales. I'm Terry Bennett, and in the studio today, my guest is John Andrews. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Terry.
John, you are a councillor.
I am.
Town council and...
County council.
County council.
That's right.
Tell us how that came about.
Well, I think it was around 2007. I had a person come into the shop, Robin Legg, and said to me... How do you fancy being a town councillor? Because you're helping people with their problems now. So I went for co-option, and unfortunately I didn't get in the first time. Split vote, chairman's vote, voted against me. But I stood for election the following year and managed to get a seat on the council. So 2008, I've been a councillor since 2008 in Sherborne Town Council.
That was the town council?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then the...
Much, much later, but in my time as a town council, I was fortunate enough to be elected as mayor. That was back in 2014-15. And 2 years ago, nearly 2 years ago, I was elected as county councillor for the town. Oh. So very proud to serve the town in both of those capacities.
We should say that your background is not in politics.
Oh,
you are more of an engineer than a politician.
Absolutely. So I was when I left school, I went to Western Helicopters as an apprentice. Yeah. Did my 4 years as an apprentice, and then became a supervisor. And eventually, my daughter was born in 1989. So 1990, I did a post-experience degree in manufacturing and business management at Warwick University, and served several management posts in Wessex after that. So
you also have owned a shop in Sherborne.
Absolutely.
So you've got what they call life experience.
Yeah. a little bit of life experience.
And a keen rugby player, I think.
Yes, I love my rugby. I was 22, I believe, when Sherborne Rugby Club started up, and I started playing for them then, and I've been involved with the club ever since. You know, about 2006, 2007, a good friend of mine, Ron Sams, said that we got to do something to revive the seconds, and so we ran that for a couple of years and rejuvenated the second team after the club had gone down a little bit of a slump. In the senior sides, I have to say, but the junior section of the club is just absolutely fantastic, you know.
We'll come back and dwell on that a little bit more.
Yep.
But let's take your first record. This is Dave Clark 5.
Absolutely.
Why have you chosen this?
Well, when I was first around in Sherborne, which born in 1959, this is the first record I remember, because we lived in St. Paul's Flats with my mum and my dad. I used to beat 7 bells out of a biscuit tin with some wooden spoons to this record. Mum always reminds me that the neighbours used to complain a little bit about this one. So it's my first ever record.
Here we go. It's Dave Clark 5 and Bits and Pieces. I'm a piece of bits and pieces.
Always be.
That's the Dave Clark Five and Bits and Pieces from 1964, chosen by John Andrews, my guest in the studio today. John, we'll come on to talk about your career in Westerns, and which then became Augusta, of course, didn't it?
Yep,
and then
absolutely.
Leonardo and
GKM,
all those other iterations. But early days then, you were born in this area, I believe?
Oh yeah, born in the Yetman Hospital, went out of maternity unit, so that was a long, long time ago now, but I can't remember when the maternity unit closed. But yeah, I was born and, like I said before, we lived in St. Paul's Flats, and then McCreary Road, and then unfortunately my father died when I was four, and we moved out to Lye for a couple of years to live with, when I was seven, to live with my my stepfather, who was absolutely brilliant man, and we stayed there for 2 years, and then I came back into the Abbey School.
I see. What was schooling like for you?
I had great fun. I mean, with a very close community in the northeast of Sherborne, in around McCreary Road area like that, and King's Road, and so that was a good start of the childhood. And then moving out to Lye, all of a sudden you discovered farms and animals and things like that. So, yeah, I remember driving a tractor around Hughie Matthews' fields. It was one of the old farmers out of Lye when I was a nine-year-old. So, yeah, brilliant. I don't think to this day my mum knows I did that. But, yeah, so we... and I used to go and help Mr. Waterfall down at Fred Fox, or the Fox's Farm down in Lye. So, and I still know his son Kevin now, who has a lot to do with the Dooslads organisation. So, yeah.
So, a couple of different schools when you were a youngster.
Ended up in Abbey School.
Abbey School, I see.
Abbey School. Mm-hmm, and then passed me 11 plus and went to Foster's.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and I should say, have you got brothers and sisters, or is it just you?
No, I have a stepsister, mm-hmm. Well, a half sister, stepsister, Joy. Where did Joy go to school? I can't remember where Joy went to school. I think that was Abbey School as well. Mm. And then St. Oldham's Joy went to. And she qualified as a nurse, so very proud of my sister as well. So yeah.
And your sporting interests, I think sporting's been quite a big part of your life, hasn't it? But were you, even in those days, were you sporting?
Yeah, even in those days, I was always competitive on the sports field. And kind of like, I played soccer for Milnport between, well, how old was I then, 17, 18? Up until I started playing rugby. And of course, we didn't have a rugby club in the town until 1981. So rugby was a passion of mine. So I enjoyed it. Loved rugby. Everything about rugby, the camaraderie. And I would encourage anybody to get into any sport. So it's not just rugby. I love football. I tennis club are doing brilliant stuff at the moment, especially with the youngsters. So I would encourage anybody to get in sport if they can, because it not only it's good for you, but it also brings friends and relationships, and it's absolutely brilliant for everybody.
It's very much the thing. You went to Foster's School.
I did.
And I can speak from personal experience and say there was a rugby tradition at Foster's School.
Absolutely.
Which no doubt you embraced.
Oh, yes. Brian Davis was the rugby master at Foster's School. Brilliant guy. And Ken House was the football master. So I played football at under 14 level and under 16 level for the schools. You know, when we used to play on Saturday mornings, of course, for the schools. Yes. But that doesn't happen anymore. But I really enjoyed it. At the same time as being a paperboy as well.
I see.
So I was a paperboy.
Pocket money.
But in those days you were allowed to be a paperboy at 11 years of age, with no restrictions from the county council or anybody, like, you know, or the education authority. So I started a paper round when I was 11 years old. So I used to do my paper round before I went to school. And the worst afternoon ever was Thursday afternoons when you had to deliver the Western Gazettes.
Yes,
so come home from school, go down to the paper shop, pick up Western Gazettes, and that's why I'm aging a bit now, because my paper round was all uphill, you know. Or downhill if you went down Castle Road, because that was my paper round.
It's taking its toll.
Can I tell you a funny story about Castle Road?
Please do.
One icy winter's morning, I was in Castle Road delivering the papers, and if you go down Castle Road, there's bungalows on the left with a severe drop. But I always used to use the walls to walk along to get down, because it saved a bit of time. One icy morning, I was dressed in my parka with my two elderly aunties used to knit me a balaclava, so I had a balaclava. It was a really frosty morning. And I slipped on the wall and went straight through, and I can't remember which number it was. I think it was 31 or 33. straight through the front room window. Luckily, didn't injure anything. Didn't get cut or anything. But, paper round. I have fond memories of paper round.
Took a bit of sorting out.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Foster School then was not just rugby, of course. There was academia to cope with well. Were you okay academically?
I really enjoyed maths and I really enjoyed physics. Mm. And I think that's what eventually landed me up with the Western Apprenticeship. But main reason I like them too, because both of those subjects were taught by the sportsmasters. So it's funny how you get that relationship with them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I guess that's true even now, that you enjoy the subject more if you have a relationship of some sort with the teacher.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Apart from those two subjects, I wasn't really interested in school, to be perfectly honest with you.
So you got to O-level point, as it was in those days.
Absolutely.
You presumably got a few somehow.
Absolutely, just a few, not as many as I should have, probably.
No.
But my mind had been wandering then, you get into that situation where you discover girls and things like that, and it kind of like your mind gets shifted a little bit.
At that point, you then had to make a decision as to what you were going to do post school.
Yep.
You weren't minded to do A levels in university or anything.
Definitely not. No, I wanted to get out of mainstream education as quickly as
you'd
I could.
Fed up with learning.
Yeah.
Well, in that environment, anyway.
Certainly in that environment. Yeah. So I originally wanted to join the Navy, but I got a lazy left eye, so I couldn't get in because of that. So that's where plump for apprenticeship at West.
And in those days, apprenticeships were quite plentiful, weren't they?
Oh yeah, I think 140 apprentices in my year in takedown at Westland. So that was, it was quite a few apprentices. You made a lot of good friends then, when you made apprentices. Friends to this day, it was really good experience doing an apprenticeship at Westlands. Yeah.
Was it always going to be Westlands, or did you look at other possibilities?
I didn't really look at any other possibilities, so all my eggs in one basket, and I managed to get in. Yeah, it was very successful.
Okay,
yeah.
That seems like an appropriate little break point. Let's have your next one, which is a certain record by Queen, isn't it?
Yeah, well, classic, isn't it? Was it 1974?
75,
was it? Yeah, 1975, so going through those years, and everybody knows the words, don't they? So everybody sings along to it.
We won't even say what the name is.
No, we don't need to.
Here we go then.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low. Anyway the wind blows, doesn't really matter to me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama, ooh,
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning.
Well, we're going to have to fade that. I mean, whoever thought of writing a single of nearly 6 minutes long, that would never catch on, would it?
Absolutely.
That was Queen and Bohemian Rhapsody, chosen by my guest in the studio, John Andrews. John, we got to the point where you'd left school and it was only ever going to be an apprenticeship at Westlands.
That's right.
Well, tell us about that then. So you arrived into this quite a large company, yep, along with maybe 140 others.
Well, we were lucky, really, because they had a really good, well-organised training school, training instructors through different skills on machining, such as milling, turning, sheet metal, which was a guy called Johnny Ham, who, funny enough, used to work in DC Engineering, which is now, or was Wincanton Engineering, and now is Tetra Pak up on the estate at the top. So we went through various skills within that area. 140 lads, you had your own group that you were with, so you made some very good friends in that group, who went on to do some great things in Westlands. Yeah, it was interesting and lots to do. There was an apprentice association that did lots of activities, 10 tours being the predominant one, mm-hmm. So lots of people went on 10 tours. I didn't actually do that myself, but and then they did lots of sailing events on the Winston Churchill sailing ship, you know, tour ship. Very good apprenticeship.
And a very active sports and social club at Westlands in those
absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely, yeah, very active. So lots of events going on down there. Yeah.
Presumably a bit of rugby to play as well, so.
We did enter one or two rugby tournaments as well. Yeah, I could kick a ball.
Other than a bit of experience of woodwork at school, you didn't have any particular engineering background.
Oh, no. No, so these are all new skills.
Indeed.
Really enjoyed the learning process down at Westlands.
Lots of practical involved, I imagine.
Yeah. The problem we had is kind of like I really wanted to be a maintenance fitter, as my chosen bit within Westlands, but that option wasn't available. So my next job was airframes and systems fitter. But at the time there was a bit of a dispute going on between the skilled men, the union dispute. I'd be doing the skilled men in the assembly hall in Westlands, and so we all got told we had to do a machining background. So I did two parts of my apprenticeship. I did first of all machining. They did it in modules, so I had to go to the machine shop, and I was in the grinding department of the machine shop and the turning department of the machine shop for the first half of my apprenticeship. And then after they finished the dispute and it's decided they were going to accept the apprentices in the assembly hall, I managed to transfer to the assembly hall and become an airframe and systems fitter.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I finished my apprenticeship as an airframe and systems fitter,
right.
Working on Sea Kings, Lynx. I didn't do Gazelles. They just moved out the assembly hall by then. The WG-30, which I don't, unfortunately just doomed to failure. That was my apprenticeship, and then I'm moving on to be a skilled man in the Lynx assembly line. Yeah.
And the apprenticeship formally lasted how long?
4 years.
4 years,
yeah.
I see. And then you were on your own, you were just an employee.
You
like
were a skilled
else.
Man then, mm, yeah. Yeah. So you were giving your own devices, but luckily enough, they had the sense to put you adjacent to an experienced skilled person, so any advice was taken, like, you know.
You were with Westlands for over 30 years in total.
Absolutely.
But you certainly didn't stay in the on the shop floor all of that time.
No, I didn't. When was it? I can't remember, but it was about 1985-ish, something like that. There was a production line coming at the end. I happened to be on that production line at the time, so we got moved to other parts of the factory, and I ended up in the 129 department, which was sub-assembly fitting. So spares, repairs, all that kind of good stuff. And luckily enough, I was a shop steward down there, and luckily enough, I got fortunate and got a supervisor's job when I was 27, which was quite early in Westlands to be a supervisor. One of the youngest, I think, that I was at the time. Certainly there's been a lot younger since, but one of the youngest at the time to become a supervisor in Westlands.
And you mentioned shop steward. You'd got involved with the union side of things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I served as a shop steward from 23 So until I became a supervisor, naturally I had to give the shop steward's job to become a supervisor. But funny enough, though, I still kept my union card until the day I left in 2002.
And a supervisor then, that's then supervising a small team of people on the assembly.
Yeah, on the sub-assembly. Right. So it wasn't exactly a small team either, but my first recollections of being a supervisor, when I got made, very nervous, you know, you changed your overalls for a light blue coat and all of a sudden you're recognisable, and they just got rid of foreman then. So it went from supervisor to the superintendent level. So being a supervisor in this nice new blue, bright blue coat going around the shop floor. And I was a supervisor in the same department as the department I worked in. So it was quite difficult transforming from the worker to shop floor worker to supervisor. But my first recollections, and my wife will tell you this, was coming home every night and soaking my feet, because I don't think I'd walked so many miles in all my life. It was unbelievable, you know, especially in toe-tacker boots and stuff like that, you know. So, but I had a good relationship with the guys, so, you know.
Because that could potentially have been quite difficult, because you were, as you say, a very young supervisor, and you were still working in the same department where you'd just been one of the team.
Yeah.
That throws up lots of potential hassle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it could do. It could do. Yeah, conflict could come about, but...
you managed to navigate your way through
that. Luckily, knowing the people, wasn't it? You know, you've got to know people who you've got to speak a bit harshly to. You've got to know people who you've got to pat on the shoulder and give them a hug and whatever. But that's what it's all about. It's all about people, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah,
people. And how long did that last before you moved on to something else?
Well, luckily enough, they split the company into kind of like Westland Engineering then, because they wanted a separate cost base. And the HR man, a guy called Bill Harding, recommended that I go on this post-experience degree course up at Warwick University. And I did that. My daughter was one, so that was 1990. So not too long after I became a supervisor, about three and a half years, I did a post-experience degree at Warwick University in their business school, which was a week at a time course, but intense, like 8 o'clock in the morning until half past 8, 9 o'clock at night for a week. And then you'd come back and work for 5 weeks, having to do coursework in between, go up and take an exam, and the next time you went up, 5 weeks, 6 weeks later, and then come back and do the same all over again. And that lasted for 2 years and two big dissertations as well. So,
yeah. Sounds pretty full on.
It was hard work with the family at home as well. So my wife was absolutely fundamental in that process and being able to do that. And from that, I got the job up in Western Helicopters. It was Western Helicopters back in those days. Or was it GKN?
One of those.
Where I looked after the pre-production flight of the Merlins 101s. So I was responsible for looking after all the planning and everything that went into them. Not the flight operations, but just all the modifications, all the safety modifications. We had a crash at charge, so we had to put a lot of modifications in and to be able to refly again. And my other responsibility was the main paint shop at Westlands as well. So that was a new skill, because I didn't know a lot about paint. I knew a bit about emulsion on walls and ceilings, but I didn't know aircraft paint.
Not quite the same, is it?
Not quite the same, no, not quite the same. But I really enjoyed that, and ended up actually going on a course in Holland at Akzo Nobel about paint surface treatments. And then from that, went back to Warwick to actually lecture on a few times on paint surface treatment. So,
I'm just slightly intrigued, because you gave a resounding didn't want to do A-levels or university degree when you were at school. You ended up doing a degree.
Yeah.
What was the transformation there? Was that just maturity, or is it just
I think it's
part
maturity.
Of the job?
Yeah, everybody's different on it. Some people can learn at school. Some people need to go out and get a bit of life experience before they realise that all of a sudden you actually probably can get some more knowledge and do something else. And that certainly aided me, because halfway through my degree, or two-thirds of the way through it, I got this other job in in Western Helicopters and ran the pre-production supply, PPS manager.
So. And what was it like going back to Warwick as a lecturer then?
That was quite interesting, yeah, because, of course, they picked the worst shift for you to go and do the lecture, so you don't do during the day, you do the one after you've had dinner, and they all have to come
back. The graveyard back. Shift.
Yeah, the graveyard shift. It was, yeah, so it was quite interesting. I think I might have been the only lecturer that's ever supplied wine to their students in the evening, because they'd sooner be in the bar. And I have to say, the best lecture room in the whole of the university was the bar and the experiences that people, you know, talked about. Wouldn't go quite to the extent of the Shorts boys who used to go. So Shorts were a big company in Northern Ireland, the aerospace company. And them boys used to take the bar to an extreme. You know, I don't think many of them had any more than an hour's sleep before they had to go into lectures the next morning. But I wasn't one of them, no.
Right. You eventually did leave the Western Group, whatever we call it, GKN, Westerns, Augusta, all the rest of it. 2002?
2002, yeah.
I see. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, from the year 2000, aerospace was on a big decline, especially in defence aerospace. We were losing contracts and things like that. And seemed like every 6 months, and it was, that we went through four redundancies from 2000 to 2002. And me being in a senior role within the area, had to make decisions and actually make people redundant. And when the fourth one came up, I had a serious chat with a guy at the golf club, a guy called Jimmy Smith, lovely guy, not here with us anymore. But he had the shop at Simon's Road, which is the area I grew up in. So I talked to him seriously about it. I came up and said to my wife one day, I said, how do you fancy owning the shop? And which she laughed her head off. And a week later, we went to see the shop and see the house and everything that went with it, because the shop is integrated in part of the house. And we took it from there, and I volunteered and left Wessons, because it's sad sitting opposite a man crying because he's lost his job. It really is. And nobody ever trained me for that. And it's a horrible thing to have to do. But... So I came out of aerospace altogether and went into the shop.
Let's take your third record.
Okay.
Madness.
What have you chosen this?
Well, I've chosen Madness because it was adolescence, wasn't it? You know, 1980, oh, yes. You know, things were starting to change, you know. I made my way in a little bit in the world, and Madness just about sums it up, really.
In nasty schools, headmasters breaking all the rules, having fun and playing fools, smashing up the woodwork tools. All the teachers in the pub, passing round a ready rub, trying not to think of when that lunchtime bell will ring again. Oh, what fun we had, but did it really turn out bad? All I learnt at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had, but at the time it seems so bad, trying different ways to make a difference through. The headmasters had enough today, all the kids have gone. Gone to fight with next door school. Every term that is the rule. Sits alone and vents his cane. Same old backsides again. All the small ones tell two tales. Walking home and squashing snails. Oh, what fun we had. But did it really turn out bad? All I learned at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had. But at that time it seemed so bad. Trying different ways to make the difference through the days. Lots of boys, lots of smells and lots of noise. Playing football in the park, kicking bush bikes after dark. Baggy trousers, dirty shirt, pulling hair and eating dirt. Teacher comes to breaking up, back of the end with a plastic cup. Oh, what fun we had, but did it really turn out bad? All I learned at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had, but at that time it seemed so bad. Trying different ways to make the difference.
Yeah.
Well, that's Madness and Baggy Trousers from 1980, chosen by John Andrews, my guest in the studio. John, we got to the point where you decided to leave Westlands after 30-odd years, yeah. So that was quite an end of an era, really, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, quite a wrench, yeah, to leave.
You then bought a shop, yeah. And the nearest thing to shop, we can say, is you'd been a shop steward, but it's not quite the same thing as owning a shop, really, is it?
No, totally different. Never owned a shop in my life. You know, so
idea appealed to you.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Like, you know, it was great because we were going to be living quite near the Griffins, and my two girls would have a home to come to quite near the school, you know, walking to school and all that good stuff. But going into a shop, you know, that very ill prepared for the shop.
It was at least an established shop.
It was setting up a new one. It was absolutely so. It was all. What can we do to grow the shop, you know? So we stripped it all out, redecorated, and banked money every day so we didn't have a cash flow problem. You know, those early days were hard, and it was cleaning it and making sure it was how we wanted it, made it nice and bright. I think it was 5 or 6 years later we put an extension on the front and kind of like enhanced it a little bit more. But busy time, 7 days a week. 364 days a year because we didn't work Christmas, and then we decided not to work Boxing Day, so knocked it down another day. So but we were open every day apart from that.
Part time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I see. So no major problems then. You've integrated into that without any major hassle.
It was good. It was hard work, lots of hours. Yeah, sure. I wouldn't bear to think what wages we were on then. Probably call it half of what the minimum wage is now. Mm. Jane and I, we did hours and hours and hours. But
was it just the two of you, or did you have any?
We had staff as well. You did. So we had a staff that we took over when we took over the shop, and we added a few more staff because in that kind of environment, staff come and go. But we had some very good staff, made very good friends with a lot of the staff that we had there. Yeah, still see them today in town and everything. But so it was good. And the good thing about the shop is there for the community. It brings a lot of people together. And there's nothing, I think one of the biggest problems around at the moment is loneliness for our older people who haven't got a partner. And to come down and have a shop, to chop and have a chat, I used to sit outside the wall and have a chat with many, many customers. You know, and still friends with them today. But I really enjoyed it. But made sure that it carried on like it was. So, yeah.
Well, it obviously must have been doing okay because you kept the shop until 2015, was it?
That's right. Yeah, 2015 we sold it.
In the middle, you did some other stuff, didn't you? And you drove some taxis at one point.
I did several things, by about 2007, I probably made myself redundant in the shop, and Jane and the staff were handling it all, and I needed something to do. So I decided that, or I didn't decide, I had a phone call from a good mate of mine, Ron Sams, who lives in South Africa now, and he was the operations director at Westlands, and he said, I want your process knowledge. Can you come back and work for us? So I did. I did that for 4 years. There was redundancy at Westlands again, so I took that again because
second time
once
around.
Again it was going down. So I volunteered for that, and then I went and got a taxi license and drove for Beaver Taxis. I had my own car, so I was a self driver, and drove for Beaver Cabs for 3 or 4 years. Yeah, it was. And do you know what? I have to say, by then I'd been elected on the council. And that was brilliant for the council work, finding out people's problems in the town when you're taking people to shops and kind of like picking up elderly people from shops and putting their bags in their houses and all that kind of good stuff.
We've led quite nicely into the council work. So how did that come about? You said at the beginning a little bit about it, but had you had any notion of becoming involved in local
politics? Not at all. Not even thought about it.
No.
Not even thought about it. It was just a comment from Robin, and he said, how do you fancy doing it? And I said, well, okay. And like I say, eventually got elected after the second time of trying, because I didn't get the co-option. And I thought, I can. It's about problem solving, being a councillor. somebody comes to you with a problem, you might not have the authority to do it within the town council, but certainly there'll be a district contact or a county contact you can get hold of and have a chat with and try and solve a person's problem. And that's what being a councillor is all about. It's people come to you with a problem, you try your best to solve it or explain why you can't, because that is sometimes the case. It's not always good news for everybody, I'm afraid.
No, sure.
You know.
I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about the council in a few minutes, but in between, just to sort of finish off your outside life, you worked for Boeing as well at one point.
That's right, yeah. So after the taxis, I had another contact that I used to work with contacted me and said, we could do your process knowledge in Boeing as well, John. And I said, OK, well, we'll give that a go then as well. Something I couldn't refuse. So that was working mainly up in the north in Salisbury, but I also dealt with the GKN on the Isle of Wight, BA Systems over in the southeast of the country. I travelled up and down the length and breadth of the country working for Boeing. Couple of trips to St. Louis, to meet people out there. Travelled around a bit, but it was good. Boeing was good, real good company to work for.
We'll take your next record. Probably a good point then to talk more about the council work.
Yep.
Phil Collins and You Can't Hurry Love. What's the significance of this one?
Well, You Can't Hurry Love, and kind of like, when was this?
84.
Mm. Been through a couple of relationships by then, obviously. You Can't Hurry Love, but because it wasn't until 1987 that I married the best person that I could ever think of marrying.
Okay.
Which was my wife, Jane.
Phil Collins, here we go. Phil Collins there, and You Can't Hurry Love, as we say, from 1983, chosen by my guest in the studio, John Andrews. John, you were running a shop. You decided, or you were persuaded, to run for the town council. And yeah, it sounds like you enjoyed that in the early days.
Oh,
you were helping
still
people.
Still enjoy it now. Enjoy it now. That's what it's all about, helping people. It's, and our town is full of lovely people.
Again, not something you had any previous background in. It's not as if you came from a family of people who'd been involved in politics necessarily.
No. Never even considered it till somebody asked me if I was interested. So,
What made you interested in?
Well, like I say, it was really just helping people and getting involved in the council. I have to say, which was quite hard in the first year, because back in those days, there wasn't too much induction in the council. You just got slung into the chamber and had to learn the rules as you went along. But that's changed quite considerably now. There is an induction, there's a nice big folder that you're advised to read and understand, because there are procedures in council, standing orders and things like that. So, yeah, it's quite...
For those of us who haven't been immersed in local democracy, how does the town council work? You have to be elected to it. Yeah. It's not particularly political, though, the town council.
No, definitely not. I mean, you will, even though people are elected on a political ticket in most cases, I'm an independent town councillor, but on a political ticket, people are elected on, but actually when you look at how the council get on, it's just fantastic, because there's no politics in it. People speak their minds and have their say, you can see, if you looked at votes within the town council, majority of them are unanimous. There might be the odd one or two that isn't unanimous, but you'll see that different people from different political perspectives have voted both for and against, so it's just not political, and it shouldn't be at town council level. It just shouldn't be political.
You're a relatively small group. What's a 8 or 12. 9 or 10, 12?
12. Okay.
And the type of topics that come to you then on your regular meetings, I know you've got a responsibility for commerce and tourism. What sort of things do you have to look at?
Well, I go to the executive meetings of the Tate Chamber of Trade and Commerce, and the Tourism Forum as well. I go to the meetings of the Tourism Forum. So you get involved in what the town council can do for those particular things. It's a bit like there was recently a survey on the feasibility of a market, a run-in similar to the Froome Market on a Sunday in Sherborne, which the Chamber of Trade and Commerce have needed to do a feasibility study. So the town council part-funded that feasibility study to enable that maybe to go forward to something else. And discussions are going on about that now. So that's quite exciting, I think, especially with the high streets and the way they are at the moment. Hopefully that can have some regeneration of the high streets. Not that we've got many shops empty in Sherborne at the moment, but we have gone through phases over the last 8-10 years where there's been multiple amount of shops that are empty, and it's really good to see them starting to fill up again. Crosskeys coming out, going to be taken over very, very soon, and the Crown is now going to be taken over. So, and I even understand that the old HSBC Bank is going to be taken over, and that's been used for something else. So really good to see that happening again, and not too many shops open, closed. But there's not a lot that the town council can do about rents and rates and stuff like that. So
in that role in particular, you must have a fairly good crossover with the Chamber of Trade, then, that they must be working partners with you.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And planning is another thing that the town council gets involved in.
We are an advisory body for the West Dorset District Council Planning Authority. So when a planning application comes forward, they will ask our advice, and we will give a decision whether we accept it or reject it. But it has to be on planning consideration grounds, because you can't just reject it out of hand because you don't like the look of something, But planning is a key part of the role, and we're hoping that in the new council, when we get onto it, the new council will devolve powers to more local people, because at the moment West Dorset are the authority, and if a planning application is rejected by us, then and we're the local people, by the way, it can go to Dorchester and West Dorset, where we can have councillors from Lyme Regis deciding on our planning applications, which they have a totally different reason to accept or reject things down there than we do in Sherborne. So it can get a bit contentious sometimes, and some of our rejections they've accepted, and some of our acceptances they've rejected. So
that's about to change before too long, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I would certainly hope so.
We should say somewhere in the middle of all of this, you ran for the county council.
Oh yeah, yeah.
What led you in that direction?
Well, I just thought we always seem to be left out in Sherborne, right? So because we're surrounded by Somerset, or this little enclave in the northeast of the county, or sorry, northwest of the county. That we get left out, and I didn't think we shouted enough about, you know, here we are Sherborne, why are we not getting the investment other places are getting? So that was my aim when I went on the council, to try and do something about that. Now, I don't think there's a cabinet member who doesn't know my name in county council back, you know, because I've been in there and had discussions and assertive discussions, shall I say, with some of the county council cabinet members.
And that's a much bigger organisation,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it, the body?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
I imagine a totally different setup and a different feel to it.
Oh, totally different feel. Yeah.
And that is political, isn't
bit
it?
Bit more politics in that one. I try not to make it politics, you know. Let's be sensible about everything, you know. Sometimes it does get a little bit political, which is not always good for the residents, is it, you know? I don't want to get onto that other subject. I won't talk about that other subject that's being talked about at the moment. But in county council, it can get a bit political. Yeah, yeah. But I keep shouting Sherborne, and they're starting to listen a little bit.
Is the enjoyment still with serving on the county council? I mean, you said you enjoyed serving on the town.
You get more involved because you know you're dealing with things like highways and special educational needs. Children, and you're getting involved with elderly issues, like the social care of elderly residents and things like that. So there's a lot more to do on the county council than there is on the town council as such. But the two combined, you know, make it a full-time job.
Mm.
Absolutely, it's a full-time job to do that. And it is on the county at the moment, but along comes the district council when they dissolve it. And all those responsibilities come into one job, so it's going to be even more of a job.
And this happens in May, doesn't it? So there's elections
Absolutely.
For the town council and for what was the county council, which is now going to be known as something different.
Yeah, it's Dorset Councils.
Dorset Councils, okay.
So it's going to be known as Dorset Council. And
that's taking away a tier of the existing
Absolutely.
Structure.
Absolutely, can only be good to take away a tier. What I'm concerned about is we're not going to make the savings that we were going to make or proposed we're going to make, but that's another point. Taking away a tier of local government, I think, can only be good for the residents. They won't have to understand now, like they do now, that housing and various other things come with the district and kind of like roads and education and elderly care, etc., come with the county. So they'll be able to go to one agency and hopefully get some answers. I mean, the town council looks after what's the town council's responsibility. We have some ancient monuments, conduit, and various other things. The Weybridge down in front of the Abbey there. Paget Gardens, you know, bandstand in Paget Gardens, which probably you've seen has got tarpaulins around it at the moment because it was falling apart. We had to do something with it. So the town council do all that and look after the verges and the parks and things like that. So, yeah.
Time is running against us, but I'm just interested. Politics at national level is a bit discredited at the moment for any number of reasons, and a lot of people have lost interest. I'm not sure whether they have. What would you encourage people to, you know, anybody thinking of going to politics at a local level? Is there still opportunities to make a difference?
Well, yeah, come in and try it. Make a difference. I mean, one phrase or one comment can make a difference, I have to say. You know, it really can make a difference. I mean, I talk to all sides in county council, and it's really interesting when you start talking to people. You all basically have the same aims, and that's to do what you can for your residents. Like, you know, I probably shape more about my Sherborne residents than a lot of other councillors because in Dorset, because I'm passionate about my town. Lived there all my life. I want to continue to live here for the rest of my life. So, that's
and rewarding when you get things done, I
imagine. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, ever since I was elected on county, I've been petitioning to get the new Puffin Crossing at the Bristol Road where we lost the guy. So cross party, that's been done. That's absolutely brilliant, you know, and that's the product of all working together. In fact, I think It's the only time I serve on the regulatory committee down at the county. That's the only time I've ever heard the regulatory committee chairman saying, "This is the way that applications for these kind of things should be done," because it was everybody, all agencies involved. Brilliant.
Good stuff. We have to go. Your sporting involvement, you're not playing rugby anymore, don't
No, you? No, not anymore. Right. I'm a keen watcher of Sherwood when I was at Bradford on Avon yesterday to watch our youngsters do the fantastic win.
Do you Absolutely. Manage to indulge in anything? You golf, and what else have you done in the past?
Golf, skittles, darts, rugby, football, tennis, everything. But I don't play any sport anymore. Might play Uno with a few friends.
Yes.
Good and card game.
A little bit of rugby discussion with our chairman, no doubt.
Oh, yes, Taff, absolutely. Taff used to play for Puddletown, back in the day.
John, it's been great talking to you, and we wish you well in your continued career on whichever the councils happen to be. I mean, you're up again for election in May, that's right. Anyway, we can't officially wish you well on that, but whichever direction life takes you, good luck with it. And your final track today is Dance the Night Away by the Mavericks. Well, just a good happy tune, isn't it?
Well, it's a good happy tune, but for 20 years now, I've been singing this on karaoke in a little bar in Turkey with my mate Andy Martin, who's in Tenerife listening today. So he'll be happy as hell, but the family all know that this is my song on karaoke.
All right, John, thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure, Terry.
Tell her no, I gotta go.